least I make myself laugh. Hello, and welcome to episode 11 of Humans Are Worse. Just gonna pop in here quickly to remind you about the Instagram Live that's going on Wednesday night at 7 p.m. British Standard Time. All you need to do is go to Instagram at Humans Are Worse Podcast. Okay, now on to what I really wanted to say. Clarice has fallen in love with me, finally! We got the stroking sorted. Of course, she's still not 100% with her head. We'll get there. And then it turned to her just staring longingly at me. The purring so loud, her curling herself around my feet. But there was one thing that was missing, and that was that she wasn't nudging up against me for some reason. And I've never experienced that before. I've always had cats that like to nuzzle. But it happened. And it was the most magical and terrifying moment of my life. So picture this. I'm in bed, duvet curled under my chin as usual. I like being toasty in the night. I'm sound asleep and have been for quite a few hours. Oh my gosh, something's gonna go terribly wrong. Clarice, come out of there. Thank you. So there I am, fast asleep, and the earth begins to shake. I get helicopters flying over my house quite a lot, and that's what it felt like I woke up to at like 2 in the morning. So I'm in a half asleep state, which I seem to be in a lot. I open my eyes just slightly and I see this white mass passing across my vision. So I'm there, just woken up, a lawnmower in my ear, and then I feel it. Clarice begins nuzzling into me. And she was really going at it, like throwing her entire body onto me. And then at one point, she would come up to my head and shove her nose into my duvet trying to get in. My gosh, maybe my voice went really weird there. I was doing the action. I shouldn't do the action. But she's purring so loud and trying to get under the duvet. And I'm so confused because this is not what I was expecting when I woke up. And I'm so happy because I put my hands out of the duvet and I'm stroking her and she's letting me stroke her. And at the same time, I'm so annoyed because it's early in the morning and I have work tomorrow. Why do cats always want attention at the most inconvenient of times? But if you think that this was the one and only time that this is going to happen, I'd like to tell you right now, you are wrong. It's happened nearly every night since. I am knackered. Having a baby lawnmower in the bed with you every night is tiring work. But let's get on to why humans are worse. So it's May 24th, 1987, in Canada. 24-year-old Kenneth Parks walks into a Scarborough police station at 4:45 in the morning, covered in blood, and states that he thinks he killed someone. He stated that he had no recollection of the past few hours, but he remembers seeing his mother-in-law's face, and it was sad, and he didn't know why. Police also noticed that he had cut all of the tendons in his hand, but he wasn't seem to be reacting to that. It was as if he couldn't feel the pain. Police grew concerned for the welfare of his in-laws and decided to do a house check, but when the officer arrived, they found the body of Barbara Woods. She had suffered blunt force trauma, causing brain bleeding and a fractured skull. She'd also been stabbed 6 times with a kitchen knife. And on the floor, they found Donald Woods. He'd been strangled, but he began to moan. He was then later able to confirm that it was his son-in-law, Kenneth Parks, that orchestrated the attack. When the police spoke to Kenneth again, he explained that he didn't remember the attack. He simply remembers trying to calm down his sister-in-laws who were at the address. And then he remembers getting into the car and then suddenly seeing he was holding a bloody knife And that was the moment that he decided to go straight to the police. Barbara and Donald's two teenage girls were hiding in their bedroom at the time of the attack. But they say that they did hear Kenneth approach their door and begin grunting. I guess I shouldn't complain about the baby lawnmower when there's more disturbing sounds I could wake up to. But then he suddenly stopped and was gone. So why did this whole thing happen? Did Kenneth have motive? Well, the short answer is no. He had no reason to kill his in-laws. So let's take a look at the events that led up to the attack. I really can't say names today. Kenneth was into heavy betting. He would gamble on horse races. But he seemed to have a curse of bad luck. Me too, Kenneth. Me too. And he was really deep into debt. In order to carry on with his addiction, he would embezzle money from his employer. But this was soon found out and he was fired. He was forced to put his house up for sale in order to pay off his debts. And around the same time, his wife gave birth to their first child. So, as you can imagine, he had many sleepless nights. He began stealing money from his wife, forging her signature and continuing to gamble. It was something that he just couldn't shake. And this really affected both his mental and physical state. He went to hospital complaining of chest pains, and they couldn't find anything physically wrong. But stress is known to present itself as physical aches and pains, as well as other strange things. Foreshadowing, maybe? On the 20th of May, just 4 days before the attack, he decided to get help and went to a Gambling Anonymous meeting. And they encouraged him to speak to his family about his addiction. He spent the next few nights not sleeping and just in a constant state of worry. On May 23rd, a day before the killing, he was meant to visit his grandmother and tell her about the addiction, but he decided to put it off until the next day. Some top-notch procrastinating there. The next day was when he was meant to be going to a picnic at his in-laws' house and break the news. This was possibly the most difficult for him, as his in-laws were closer to him than his actual family. When he first met his wife, she was actually a runaway, and he had convinced her to go back to her family. So they absolutely adored him. But since he cancelled his plans with his grandmother, him and his wife began arguing, as she said that he was just putting it off. Well, obviously. After the argument, Kenneth left to go play a rugby match, and when he returned, his wife had to go to work. So he was in charge of looking after their daughter. Around 10 p.m, his wife returned, and the tension seemed to have calmed a little, so they watched a bit of TV together before bed. Now, their marriage really was on the rocks, so Kenneth was mostly sleeping on the couch. His wife did say that he could come and sleep in the bed with her, but he decided to, again, spend the night on the couch. He ended up falling asleep around 1:30 in the morning. A little while later, Kenneth got up and drove 14 miles from Pickering to Scarborough to the home of his in-laws. He took out his spare key and entered through the garage, picking up a tire iron and a kitchen knife on his way. It was here that he strangled Donald and beat and stabbed Barbara. Since he had no recollection of the events, he went through several psych assessments, and at the time of the trial, his defence lawyer called upon 5 different doctors. They stated that they believed Kenneth was sleepwalking at the time of the attack. Because, like I said before, he got up, drove, and attacked. I never said he woke up, but I'll forgive you for thinking that it was implied. But it is strange to think that he drove 14 miles, going through 3 sets of traffic lights and 4 right-hand turns, asleep. Kenneth did have a history of sleepwalking, and when he was 11 years old, he nearly walked out of a 6th-floor window. When in jail, his cellmates reported that he would sit up in his sleep with his eyes wide open and mumble something before lying down and going back to sleep. The defence also argued that he was under a great amount of stress. He'd been sleep deprived for 48 hours And that day he had played rugby on a hot and humid day, and he was pretty out of shape. Imagine getting away with that as an excuse. Oh, sorry, I killed my in-laws, but I was playing rugby yesterday. Totally makes sense. But even though her mother was dead and her father injured, Kenneth's wife stood by him the entire time. And he was actually acquitted of both murder and attempted murder on the grounds of diminished responsibility due to sleepwalking. The decision was later appealed, but they stuck to their guns and it wasn't overturned. So he sleepwalked. Sleepwalked? Sleepwalked. He was sleepwalking. Or as some like to theorise, he was possessed by a demon. Well, it's better than the rugby excuse. But either way, he went on to lead a normal life. Him and his wife did get a divorce, but he later remarried and had more children. In 2009, he ran as a trustee on the Durham District School Board, but he wasn't elected, for obvious reasons. So that case was based on the fact that Kenneth had no recognition of what he was doing. He had no recollection of what he'd done, no motive, and testimony given by the two sister-in-laws suggested that he had no concept of reality at the time. But surprise, this is kind of a two-parter. I found another case that I want to cover, but there's not a lot of information out there. But it shows a case in which the sleepwalking defence does not work. In 2001, a man named Antonio Nieto was arrested for using an axe to murder his wife and mother-in-law, while also injuring his daughter. The altercation stopped only because he was disarmed by his son, who was then able to call the police. When questioned, Antonio stated that at the time, he believed he was defending himself against a pack of angry ostriches. I bet he played rugby the day before. So he must have been sleepwalking and harmed his family by mistake. However, when his children spoke to the police, they stated that Antonio had actually spoken to them both, calling them by name and telling them not to switch the light on because their mother was asleep. And I doubt he'd say that to a bunch of angry ostriches. So unlike Kenneth Parks, this showed that Antonio Nieto did have a sense of reality. He knew who his children were. They weren't aggressive ostriches. Now I'm just thinking of ostriches playing rugby. Oh, this episode has really got into my head. So Antonio was sentenced to 10 years in a mental health facility. He also lost custody of his children, obviously. So even though his sleepwalking story didn't work, I guess the whole story did get him a lighter sentence. Thanks, ostriches. I really wish I had more information about that, but the only article I could find that solely focused on this case was written in Spanish. In case you haven't guessed, I'm not Spanish. Clarice might wake me up in the middle of the night, but at least it's not grunts or the sounds of a bunch of angry ostriches. Guess that's another reason why humans are worse. Want to prove me wrong? Let me know what kind of crimes your furry fiend is committing by sending an email. You can also send in your own true crime short stories and ideas for me to fact check on the show. Just send an email to humansareworse@gmail.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Humans Are Worse Podcast.